Well, hey, we're in this series called Bad Religion. This is week 6. And what we've been looking at over the past couple of weeks is a series of statements that Jesus makes. These critiques that Jesus offers against the religious establishment of the day. They're known as the 7 woes of Jesus. Today we're on woe number 5, week 6, because we had an intro. And so today is woe 5. And let's just say Jesus isn't pulling any punches, as we've seen over the past couple of weeks. He's not looking to make any friends with these statements. In fact, he's doing quite the opposite. He's ruffling some feathers. I guarantee you, people are going to be ticked off with the things that he is saying. And we find these woes, these 7 woes in the book of Matthew, and they show up towards the end of the life of Jesus. So he's been going for a while. He's been teaching. He's seen some things. He's witnessed some different things. He's had certain experiences. He's had conversations with people. He's heard about their religious experiences. And he, could we say he's fed up? Maybe he's seen some forms of religion, some bad religion, should we say, that's really harming people. People who have this genuine desire to connect with God, to discover who God is and what it is that God desires for them in their lives. And so he offers these statements because he's trying to correct some of these harms. He's trying to offer a different picture. Right from the beginning, what I said was, hey, we're going to offer these critiques. We're going to talk about them. We're going to look at them. But we don't want to end there because you don't want to just tear down. Anyone can do the deconstruction part, but it's the rebuilding. So what does the rebuilding look like? If Jesus is calling out certain forms of religion that are harmful, well, what are the positive forms of religion? What does the rebuilding look like? And if we're being honest, there's plenty of forms of bad religion in the world today. There's plenty of times that people have used the name of God in ways that are completely contrary to what God desires for us as humans. So these statements, they're timeless. They didn't apply 2,000 years ago and then poof, that's it. But rather, these are statements that are timeless and that are important for us today, right where we find ourselves. So let's jump into this 5th woe. It's found in Matthew chapter 23, verse 25. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You clean the outside of the cup and dish, but inside they are full of greed and self-indulgence. Blind Pharisee, first clean the inside of the cup and dish, and then the outside also will be clean. Have you ever put dishes in your dishwasher, and you go to remove them from the dishwasher, and the outside of the bowl, the cup, whatever it happens to be, sparkling clean. It's white, whatever color that the dish happens to be, the thing looks like it just went through a car wash. And then you remove it from the dishwasher, but then you look inside, and maybe it's a cup and it still has that coffee ring inside of it. You ever have this happen to you before? Or maybe it's a bowl, and there's all this junk that's caked on the bowl, and you're like, oh. Again, my dishwasher didn't work. This is what Jesus is describing, faulty dishwashers, where they're cleaning the outside, and the outside, man, that thing, I mean, yeah, you could eat off that. That thing is so sparkling clean, but on the inside, you're like, oh, I don't want to put my food, I don't want to put my drink in here. This is still dirty. Essentially, this is what Jesus is saying. The externals, flawless. Blameless, perfect. The appearance of something, again, blameless, flawless. We're going through, as you're all aware, you're probably sick of me hearing about it, I'm sick of living through it, major mold and asbestos remediation, abatement, whatever you want to call it in our home. Our house, when we bought it, thing looked great. It's perfect. It was very, very clean. And look, if you've been to our house, you know how anal we are about keeping our house clean. Like, seriously, Ben, like, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But then we started ripping into some walls, and you see there's mold growing behind these walls. There's mold under the ceiling here. There's asbestos dust in the back corner of this room. See, on the outside, everything looked great, sparkling clean. But then as you dig a little deeper, as you look inside, as you start peeling things away, there's a rot, a deterioration. There's something else going on inside that is completely different than what is seen simply on the outside. We've talked about this multiple times before. We all have an external life, and then we have an internal life. The external life is the life that every other person can see. It's what you see when you look in the mirror. And let's be honest, how much time do we spend on our external life? How much money do we spend on our appearance? How much heartache is produced within us by comparing our external appearance to the external appearance of someone else? Whether it's what we look like, the things we say, how successful we are, the type of car that we drive, the clothes we wear. And then let's move it into the religious realm. How many Bible studies I attend, how much of the Bible I have memorized, how my prayer sounds externally for all others to hear. So we can be really, really good at coming off as successful, as all being put together in the external world. But sometimes our internals, they tell a different story. Sometimes we're aware of that story. Other times we're not even aware of what's going on inside of us. I was talking to Steph yesterday, and she said she has a friend who their husband is, he's depressed right now. And the sad thing about this is I'm hearing this from so many people. Like, this is a really, really hard time to be alive and to do life, isn't it? This is really hard. We've been through something extremely traumatic over the past year, and it's showing up in our mental health. And this is something that we can't just avoid. We can't deny this. This is true. And the weight of what we've experienced together collectively and what it's meant for us individually, it's really, really weighing on us. And so I hear this far too often, which is why what we're doing here together, what we're doing next week when we gather and say we can actually party together again, and we can actually see each other and meet in person and not in Zoom, it is so, so important. And talking to Steph about her friend, the wife said, well, why don't you go see someone? Why don't you see a therapist or a counselor? Go talk about this with someone. And he said, you know, I don't want to do that because oftentimes people go see someone and then they get worse. Because see, we can hide from ourselves. And when you have someone kind of poking and prodding and asking the right question, it can be really, really painful. And so, yeah, that's not to be taken lightly. As we peel the layers away, we find all the parts inside of us, and the truth is, we don't like all those parts. There's things that are happening within that we would rather just kind of push to the surface. We'd rather avoid them. What Jesus is saying here in this woe, and actually what we'll see when we talk about the sixth one 2 weeks from now, is that power, contrary to what we've been told, to what advertisers tell us, true power doesn't reside in the external, but rather true power resides within. As we work through all the inner things that are happening inside of us. Notice here, Jesus says, you clean the outside of the bowl, but inside is full of what? Two things. Greed and self-indulgence. Now this word greed, it's the Greek word harpazo. This is a really interesting word. Because yes, it's been translated as greed. It means to rob, to seize by force. Maybe my favorite of this, of the definition here, plunder. Sounds like a pirate, right? Pirates are plundering. They're trying to get more and more. What this word is describing When Jesus uses this word, he's describing a way of being that is never satisfied. A way of being that's after more and more and more. Notice, this happens internally, but then externally it's manifested, is it not? By how we spend time, money, the things that we focus our attention on. So Jesus is saying, hey, outside everything looks great, sparkling clean, like that dishwasher, but inside there is this insatiable hunger. There's a lack of satisfaction. Could we say maybe there's a lack of peace within? On the outside, man, you got it together. You look great. The way you're answering all the questions, you guys are spot on, but inside, there's like this swirling storm. On the outside, you're exhibiting or you're showing peace, but inside, there's anything but what you're showing externally. And then he uses another word, self-indulgence, the Greek word akrasia. This one means without self-control, powerless, mastered and controlled by appetites and urges. Here's another definition. Someone inclined to excess and shows no restraint in taking what they want. On the outside, man, it's looking great, but inside, you ever experienced this? Where you can kind of hold it together for everyone outside, but inside, there's this weight, this tiredness. I mean, it's just draining in itself. Whenever there's a split between your inner life and your outer life, that's draining, is it not? Because essentially what you're doing is you're trying to be someone other than who you are inside. You're running from all that's happening within you, or you're forcing yourself to appear a particular way, but inside there's all these other things that are going on. Jesus is saying to the religious leaders, outside you're a picture of perfection. When you get up in front, when you teach, I mean, man, you have all the right words to say, the right Bible verses to quote. You have the right prayers to offer. You even have the right wisdom, the right advice to give to people. You have all of that down, all the right things. But inside, it's like there's this raging storm. And you're overwhelmed inside by emotion and appetites and urges. Inside, there is no peace or satisfaction. Again, the question that's being asked, the question that's being raised is, where does true power, maybe we could say, where does true spiritual power come from? Does true spiritual power, does living the life that God desires for us, does it come from simply doing all the right things? Saying all the right words, going to the right places, looking a certain way? See, what's really funny is this morning when I got dressed, I knew it was going to be really hot out, and I said, let me put shorts on. You know, growing up, going to church, I wasn't allowed to wear shorts. Now my dad is wearing shorts too. Right? I mean, there's a certain appearance oftentimes that you're supposed to give others, even when you go to church. When you leave your house, you want to look and appear a certain way. Where does spiritual power come from? How do you honor God? How do you please God? To the religious leaders of the time, though, they said, well, it's the externals, the things you do, say, how you look. And Jesus is saying, whoa, hold on a second here. You got that down, but you're missing the point. You hypocrites, there's a schism. There's a split. Sure, everything looks great. You got your Versace. You got everything. You're driving up in your Porsche horse, or I guess they didn't have horses back then, whatever. You know, your sandals are sparkling clean. You know, you got someone who's, you know, waving palm branches to clean the dust off as you walk, whatever. You're sparkling clean, but inside, man, and that's where true power resides. See, Jesus, what he does, he turns this all upside down. He says, you know what you should have done? Here's what you should have done. Clean the inside of the cup first, and then the outside will also be clean. Don't worry so much about that appearance. You focus on your inner life. you give some attention to that swirling storm within. You be honest with yourself, with others. And look, it's painful. I know. It's painful. It's hard. And what's up, we only can take so much at a time. You can't just rip the Band-Aid off. Yeah, sometimes you can, you do, and it's really, really painful. You take one small step. You put one toe in the water. You slowly work your way into the deep section. Because we've all been through so much, whether it's this past year or through our entire lives. We're constantly being battered and beaten down. Life, if anything, it's joyous, yes. It's hard, and where is the joy found? The joy is found by wading through the muddy waters, by pulling the thorns out one at a time. True joy isn't found by avoiding and denying and looking great on the outside, but true joy is found as you begin mastering, or at least begin to make sense of your inner life. Let's do this. So remember, the question is, where does true power come from? Where does spiritual power come from? I have four emotions that are here, and I'm going to give this one. So I'm going to give Heiko some love, because I'm really going to miss him. I'll give Debbie, because I can pick on her, some bitterness. Ben, pick on you too. I can. I'm going to give Ben some anger. And I'm going to give Lois some hope. Now, did I just give anyone love, bitterness, hope, or anger, hope? Did I? Why not? It's internal. I can't externally, sure, my actions can show love, bitterness, anger, hope. Of course they can. And, you know, here's the truth. That can produce those emotions within you as well. But if anyone were to come up to me and ask me, hey, why do you love your wife? Why'd you get married to Steph? And I would be like, well, because she has brown hair, because she's a certain height, because she looks a certain way. If I could just give you all these facts, you'd be like, that's kind of weird. If I were to ask any of you, why do you love a particular person, whoever that person might be, and you started listing a whole bunch of facts about that person, all right, I get it, but the truth is that love comes from somewhere within. Oftentimes we'll equate love with a spark. Sometimes we have this phrase, it was love at first sight, and whether that's true or not, fine, I get it. This side of the room is like totally in agreement. You guys are skeptical. I understand. That's fine. But how did you fall in love with that person? It starts from within. You can try rationally explaining it, but it's only going to get you so far. You know, why does God love us? We can rationally explain that. There's some facts. There's some Bible verses. Fine. But if it just stays up here, it doesn't work its way into our heart, we'll never experience the true love of God. We'll never experience the grace of God. Oftentimes when I hear people's stories and they say, man, I had this experience where I was just overwhelmed by love. I had this experience where I felt unworthy, filled with shame, and then I can't explain it, but it was like grace, forgiveness was just being poured out over me, and for the first time, I experienced the grace and the forgiveness of Jesus. We can read Bible verses about it, but then you all have your own experience in that moment when what you read or what someone told you became real to you. No one can just hand that to you. They can show it. They can visibly manifest it themselves. But true love, all the emotions, they all come from somewhere deep within us. You ever have a string on a shirt or a coat or any kind of cloth and you go to pull it out a little bit and you try to rip it? You know, you try to do it really fast. You ever try doing that before because you're just too lazy to get a scissor? Or is that just me? And unfortunately, what happens is you don't give it the right force, and you start untangling your entire, you're like, oh no, I have now 3 feet of string. Can't wear those anymore. I mean, that's how it is within. You start unraveling, and then it all just, you realize it's all connected to somewhere within. It's like a shirt string. It's like a cloth on a pair of pants. You start unraveling, and it's somewhere within. That's how it is, what Jesus is talking about. There's something deep, deep within us. And as we give attention and focus and time, and as we're honest with all that's swirling around within, we start to experience this power, this spiritual power. Maybe we could call it this spirit power, because if there's one thing that God desires from all of us, it's authenticity. It's our honesty. It's, hey, you know what? There's some junk built up in the bowl. There's still a coffee stain, and the truth is I'm having so much trouble getting that stain out of my white china. All right. God says, great. We can work with that. We can work with that. That's fine. You know what? It's going to take a lifetime and beyond to remove that stain. And here's the truth. It's okay. That's okay. The religious leaders thought they had to get to a certain place. We should be this way. We have to be this way. Why? I don't know. Maybe because then they thought God would be pleased with them. But here's Jesus critiquing that way of being, because to Jesus, the thing that Jesus desires is the thing that God desires, honesty. And yeah, there's some stuff in there. And together, we're going to work through it. So two ways for us. I'm going to give you two ways to master the inner life. The first is a question. And this question is, what are the mental tapes that are playing in your head? What are the mental tapes playing in your head? Let's take two doctors. Let me tell you a story. I'll tell you a parable. Imagine you're out in the parking lot of life and you're playing frisbee after service because you want to get some extra exercise and get a sweat on. So you're out in the parking lot playing frisbee. You fall, you shatter your ankle. This is not foreshadowing, it's not prophetic. All right, don't worry. You go to the emergency room and there's a doctor who comes in, looks at your ankle and says, I'm going to have to operate on this ankle. There's nothing we can do about it. Your ankle is just shattered beyond repair. I'm going to have to operate. As the doctor is telling you all this, you can tell clearly he's shaking. He's nervous. You come to discover this is the doctor's first day on the job. I don't know why an emergency room doctor is doing orthopedic surgery, but just work with me on this illustration, all right? Just imagine this. We're in some small bum hick town somewhere far off in Wisconsin, all right? Oh, wait, sorry, Ted. So, like North Dakota, we good there, right? Yeah, Florida says it's okay. So, okay, North Dakota, great. So the guy is shaking, he's nervous. Let me ask you, is this the doctor that you want operating on your ankle? I mean, what do you think is going through his head? I don't know if I can do this. This is my first day on the job. I don't, you know what? When I went to school, this is why they banished me all the way out here, because they didn't think I really had what it takes. So he has all these thoughts playing through his mind, these fears, these insecurities, these self-doubts. You're looking at this person and you're like, please step far away from me. Can I be transferred to another hospital or at least a competent physician? Now, imagine same scenario, right? Shatter your ankle, you're playing frisbee in the life parking lot. You go to the emergency room. This time, a doctor comes in. This guy's confident. All right, here's what we're going to do. He's just telling you straight up. He's already calling the nurses. He's prepping everyone. You're going to feel a lot more comfortable, are you not? Because what do you think are the mental tapes playing through this doctor's mind? I got this. I can do it. I have the experience. I know what I'm doing. Same situation, two completely different scenarios based off of what thoughts were going through each doctor's mind. What was on a loop on the first doctor versus the second doctor? See, we don't realize this. We don't realize all the ideas that are going through our mind, all the things that are playing constantly, time and time again. But the truth is, those statements, those tapes, they are shaping your life. They're shaping what you believe about yourself. So the first question, what are the mental tapes? And the first step is awareness of what's playing through your mind and how are those tapes shaping you. How is the internal shaping your external? Because again, where does it start? Internally, and then it manifests itself externally. So how does the internal, how is it shaping you externally? And then here's the second step. You replace those messages by relying on the Spirit. There's a beautiful verse, I'm sure many of you have heard this verse before. It shows up in Ezekiel chapter 36, verse 26. Here's Ezekiel speaking for God. I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. I'll remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. I will put a new heart and a new spirit in you. Think about the religious leaders Jesus was critiquing. It was all about them, what they could produce, what they could do through their own power. Oftentimes, we get caught up in this way of being as well. We get caught up in what we can produce, what we can do, how we can externally show up. Here's God speaking, I will give you a new heart. I will give you a new spirit. I will replace all those damaging, destructive, harmful tapes, and I will replace them with a new story. I will speak fresh, healing, loving, forgiving, grace-filled words over you. Words that tell you wherever you are okay, and you're loved, and you're worthy. See, when those are the words playing through our minds, that will shape you in a particular direction. That will begin taking that swirling lack of peace and lack of satisfaction within and begin moving you in a direction of peace and satisfaction and not having to always prove and produce, but it brings you to a place of rest. The teachers were working for a purity that only came from God. Jesus says, the purity that you're after, the power that you're after, it comes as you're honest, as you rest, and as you allow yourself to trust that you're loved, you're forgiven, and you're worthy. And as we trust that message internally, we begin to show up externally in ways that bring life, joy, and peace to ourselves and to the rest of the world. So in the words of Jesus, first, work on the inside of the dish, and then the outside will flow from who you're becoming internally. Let's pray. God, I thank you for these words of Jesus. God, these harsh words of Jesus that challenge us. God, these words that can make us uncomfortable, that can challenge our conceived ideas about who you are. God, our beliefs about what you desire for us. God, I pray that if any way we've been striving, God, we've been trying to produce, God, we've been trying to keep the outside clean at the expense of the inside. God, I ask that you would show us that. God, that you would grant us awareness to any ways that we've been running from our internal life. And God, I ask that, God, that you would give us the strength, God, the power, God, to begin giving time and focus and attention to what's happening within. And God, as we do so, I ask that you would meet us in those moments. I ask that your grace, God, your love would be bigger than anything that we feel within. And if there's any dissatisfaction, God, if there's any lack of peace, God, I pray that we would begin to experience your peace and your rest in powerful ways this week. May we come to discover this truth, that true power, God, true spiritual power comes from within, not from how we show up externally. We pray all this in the name of Jesus. Amen.